This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Solar panels on roofs to generate electricity used to be the stuff of hobbyists or rabid conservationists, but solar has now gone mainstream in a big way in North Carolina. Our state put more solar power online last year than any state other than California, and that happened despite major restrictions. Homeowners who decide to install solar hope to recoup their investment in lower energy costs, but that takes some time. At the moment, any excess power generated by these rooftop arrays can only be sold to the power company serving your area. But a bill in the North Carolina House would change that by creating two new options that would allow the solar companies to rent their arrays to home and business owners and sell the excess power themselves. Essentially, the bill would create a mini utility on your roof and fundamentally change the way solar makes its money. Duke Energy is opposed, but not necessarily for reasons you may suspect. Even some in the solar industry are opposed to the idea, and so today we look at this and other proposals, hear the pros and cons, and the arguments for and against. Representative John Soka is a Republican Cumberland County representative representing the Fort Bragg area in the North Carolina House. He sponsored House Bill 245, the Energy Freedom Act, and he joins us now from studios at the State House in Raleigh, thanks to our buddies at WUNC. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me this morning.
You're welcome. Jim Warren is with us by phone. He is executive director of NC Warren. That's a nonprofit working for a swift North Carolina transition to energy efficiency and clean power. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
To be here.
Nice to have you. And Ben Bradford, energy reporter for WFAE News, is also with us in our studio. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We invited representatives from Duke Energy to join us. They declined, citing a scheduling conflict with their spokesperson. But I think we have that covered with some information that you've brought with you, Ben, from Randy Wheelis from Duke Energy.
Yeah, I've talked to him several times, and we'll say what they've told us.
We'll work that into the program. Solar power and the push for clean energy is generally thought of as the province of the left. But Representative Soka, you are a Republican representing a rural area of North Carolina. You introduced this bill that could change the face of the solar industry in the state. Why your interest in solar power? Why this bill? Why now?
Thank you for that question. I think that solar power and clean energy is not just a province of the left, but should be a province of everyone who's interested in lower energy costs across the state. My interest in this began because I do represent Fort Bragg, and I'm a retired lieutenant colonel from the Army. You may or may not know that the Department of Defense has a mandate for all military bases across the United States to generate at least 25% of their on-post utilization every day by renewable resources. And I initially started looking at that and seeing what was being done for Fort Bragg, for Camp Lejeune, and the other posts. And while some is being done, I didn't think enough was being done. And the key holdups seemed to be legislatively. And that's why I introduced this bill actually 2 years ago. It was much more restricted then. It was called the Military Good Neighbor Act, and it would only have authorized third-party powered sales on military posts. At that time, I was working with Duke Energy, and they said, well, please pull that back. We're working on some solutions for this for both Camp Lejeune and Fort Bragg, and give us a little time. We got 100 people working in a room on this. So I said, okay, we backed off. Didn't have enough support at that time in the legislature. 2 years go by. I was reelected. I come back, talk to them. Well, apparently the 100 people they had working in a room was working on the purchase of REC Solar, which is a company that is based in California that specializes in third-party sales. They bought them for $235 million, and Duke got in a big way into third-party sales, only not within our state. They're selling it to other states. So I got re-energized in the issue, and that's kind of the genesis of it. I might want to take a breath and let you ask a question.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. So right now, the way things sit, if I understand this correctly, if I want to have solar power in my house, I call a company. They come out. They put an array on the roof. I pay them for that. It could take years to recoup my investment because what I'm going to get back is some tax credits, and I'm also going to get back some money that the power company will pay me for the power that I don't use that goes back to the grid. And underneath right. that scenario, I guess I benefit as a homeowner from reducing the energy I consume and pay for from Duke Power or whatever my utility happens to be, and I can sell power to them for a set sum of money. Is that the way it's done in most of the rest of the country, Jim?
Well, in most of the country, third-party sales are allowed. In fact, there are now only four states that explicitly seem to prevent third-party, and it used to be five until just a few days ago. Georgia has joined the ranks of allowing third-party solar. Third-party sales has driven the rooftop market across the country. In other words, a big majority of all of the rooftop installations have relied on that type of financing because that upfront cost is a real barrier for most people being able to get into rooftop solar.
So, Representative Soka, as I understand your bill, it would essentially set up a no-money-down solar paradigm, a whole new way of doing business here in the state. Some have called this putting a utility company on your roof. Explain your bill to us.
Well, I don't know that it's putting a utility company on your roof. But it does change how you could have solar. Right now, as was explained, if you want solar on your rooftop, you have to pay in full the full cost of that, and that can range anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000 up front. So there's not a lot of folks I hang with that have that kind of money. What this bill would do would allow third-party solar financing, either one of two ways. You would lease the system directly from a company, kind of like where if you're a business person, you lease a copier. At the end of the lease, you have an option to buy it out. Or leasing a car, similar type thing. A lot of folks lease expensive high-end cars because they can't afford the payments if they're going to buy it outright. Exact same circumstance here. You're leasing the system, much lower cost up front. The leasing company makes sure that the equipment is maintained and hooked to the grid properly. And you actually save money because you're leasing it, not putting that big chunk of change up front.
But if you lease it, you're still paying a monthly payment on the lease, one would presume, and that for a finite amount of time. Do you really end up saving any money? Because even though you're not taking as much power from the grid, you're also not selling that power back to Duke Energy. You're still paying your lease. So is your lease payment going to be less than your power payment?
Well, in the states where this is allowed and it's been successful, the answer is yes, it does save you money. Will it be successful for every person here in North Carolina? I mean, I don't know. But my thing is, as you mentioned, I'm a Republican and I'm about free markets. This is a permissive bill. It allows people to do things as opposed to being restrictive. And I think that if you own your house and you own the roof on the house, that you have the right to put whatever you want to up there, however you want to finance it.
It
shouldn't be government's job to restrict that.
Has anybody talked, Ben, about how this might impact a person? If this goes through and you decide to take advantage of it and lease a solar array on your roof, is there any way to determine if you will actually save money?
Well, I think that the main thing is that as opposed to having a loan that you have to take out, you know, which then you have to pay off over a certain amount of time, and now you're in debt. Mm-hmm. What we see happen under the lease scenario is then you're essentially paying rent for it. So obviously that means that you have different terms and there's sort of different restrictions. There's a different kind of burden that you're taking on. But the other part of the bill, Representative Soka, that I think that you haven't gotten to yet, is that it does allow not just leases, but also what's called third-party sales. And maybe you want to explain
right.
that part of it.
Right, third-party sales, and let me use Fort Bragg as an example. To meet their 25% renewable mandate by 2025, right now, Duke Energy is the only one that could build a solar array or any other type of renewable energy on Fort Bragg to help them meet that standard. This bill would allow anyone to do that and hook into the grid. There's a lot of solar companies in this state and outside the state that have a lot of expertise in renewable energy in building these type of arrays and systems. So it's allowing the free market to do what it does best, allow entrepreneurs to come up with solutions to problems at low cost and make some money. That's what this bill is about. We're not restricting it to just saying Duke and relying on Duke Power to allow them to put renewable on Fort Bragg. They're trying to right now. I understand that there's a contract negotiations ongoing, but it's run into some problems. I don't know the details.
So right now we have this kind of interesting system in North Carolina where and everything we're talking about today is going to kind of deal with this, which is that we have we get our power from regulated monopolies. So we say, okay, we have one company that's going to supply power for everybody, and that way it's consistent. We know who's giving us power. We create this enormous economy of scale. So for most of North Carolina, that's Duke. In some areas, it's Dominion. In some areas, it comes from co-ops.
And they have to provide that power by law to people who want it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Correct. And so the third part of this bill, the third part, when we say third party sales, you're essentially talking about letting solar companies, small solar companies that are on rooftops, sell their power directly. So it creates essentially somebody else that people can buy power from as long as it's, you know, on their rooftop.
Now, we don't have this law in place right now. And right now, the homeowner's only option is, if they want solar, is to go out and buy these systems and hope that they'll make their money back over time. And yet, North Carolina has put more solar on the grid than any other state other than California in the last year. So why mess with success?
Yeah, so if I can just quickly maybe give the context for this. Right now, across the country, solar is about half of solar comes from utility scale size projects. These are massive projects out in farm fields or, you know, rural areas, arrays of solar panels extending across the sky.
Right.
And in North Carolina, and then the other half comes from nationwide comes from commercial or residential solar. So this is what we kind of colloquially call rooftop solar, where businesses, you know, or homes have their own. In North Carolina, it's almost entirely comes from utility scale, from these kind of massive ones. That's where we've
seen solar farms.
Okay. Yeah, that's where we've seen kind of the massive growth in North Carolina. And rooftop solar, which is what we're talking about right now, makes up a tiny fraction of North Carolina solar power.
Jim Warren, I know you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, a couple of comments about the saving energy. I mean, this is a place where, as commented earlier, it's not just a left or right issue. NC Warren, for example, has been a consumer protection organization for a long time, you know, challenging rate hikes and Duke Energy's very business model, which we call raise rates to build power plants we don't need. And, you know, and so their monopoly control over the state is not serving the customers well. But this type of competition will allow, as Representative Soka articulated very nicely, competition to come in and force Duke to compete. And then we'll find out how much the marketplace sees third-party sales as being beneficial. In other states, obviously, customers are saving a lot of money, and that's why Duke is so concerned about this bill. And I will note that when we talk about a left and right issue, two recent polls show that a huge majority of North Carolina voters, left and right, support the idea of competition in the electricity business and support solar power, too. So, and I'd like to comment, I really appreciate Representative Soka's leadership on this issue, because in a state like this especially, it's not easy to step up and try to do something that Duke Energy doesn't like. They have a lot of corporate muscle, and they use it, and they're using it right now very strongly at the legislature and across the state to try to beat back this legislation.
I want to reiterate that we invited Duke Energy to be with us on the program, and they declined today. We'll come back and get some of their perspective from Ben Bradford from WFAE News when our conversation continues. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Humane League, hosting the fourth annual Charlotte Veg Fest, a festival which raises awareness and support for plant-based compassionate lifestyles. Saturday from 2 to 7 p.m. in Plaza Midwood, charlottevegfest.com. And ABZ, creative partners, marketing and communication strategists committed to helping businesses succeed. Creative, scalable solutions and strategic advice available at abzcreative.com. A couple of weeks ago, we spent an hour talking about Charlotte's apartment boom. 10,000 units are about to go online. 10,000 more are in the planning stages. And these buildings literally are changing the face of Charlotte. And that's concerning to many, particularly in established neighborhoods like Plaza Midwood, Noda, Elizabeth, where some longtime businesses are being forced to consider relocating. And that promises to change the character of those neighborhoods. We'll talk about that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, according to a new study, the number of Americans not affiliated with any religion now make up more than 20% of the population. The increase is especially pronounced among younger people. Causes and consequences of declining religious affiliation in the U.S.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about solar power. We'd like to know if you'd like to see more solar options in the state. If rooftop solar were easier to come by, would you add it to your home? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE or email us at WFAE at charlottetalks at WFAE.org. We're talking with Representative John Soka, a Republican from Cumberland County, who is the sponsor of the Energy Freedom Act, which would change the way solar is installed on many rooftops around the state if the bill passes. Jim Warren is also with us, a supporter of the bill, and executive director of NC Warn. Ben Bradford is also here, energy reporter here at WFAE News. We invited some folks from Duke Energy to join us, and they were going to join us and decided yesterday that they could not. So let me get your impression, because you've talked to Randy Wheelis and others at Duke Energy, Ben. Where does Duke Energy come down on all of this?
Yeah, so very simply, the simple response, and Randy is their spokesman on renewable energy, and I've talked to him about this good amount, and here's what he says when it comes to this bill.
We think a better ideal is a comprehensive approach to solar. There are a lot of solar issues in the state. They're kind of interconnected, so you could solve one problem, create two others. So if you look at states that have made progress in solar, it's usually through these comprehensive approaches, which we think would work in North Carolina.
So that's the word you always hear them use, is comprehensive. And when you ask what that includes, there's a lot of issues, some of which are pretty technical. I would say maybe the two to highlight most is one is something called net metering. And essentially, you've mentioned it before, when a solar customer, when someone has rooftop solar, the amount that they don't use during the day, you know, when they're not there, that goes into the grid, Duke actually takes off their bill. So it credits for them, essentially buys the power from them. And it buys them for it not at the rate that it buys from, let's say, you know, an industrial solar farm, not the wholesale rate. It buys it at the retail rate. So,
if they charge you X amount of dollars per kilowatt hour, they pay you that same amount per kilowatt hour you're giving back to them.
That's exactly right. And so this is very controversial in the utility industry. They say, well, you know, hey, we buy wholesale from everybody else. Why should we buy retail from, you know, from rooftop solar customers? There's also a question of, you know, how can Duke participate in it? You know, can Duke do its own rooftop solar offerings? Mm-hmm. The one they point to is in South Carolina. They supported a deal down there that was sort of this compromise with solar companies, and you had kind of both sides touting it, which is a rare thing you don't see very often in these circumstances. And that allowed Duke a pathway to get involved in rooftop solar in there. As Representative Soka said earlier, you know, Duke has bought a rooftop solar company out in the West. So these are the two main issues I would highlight. One is this net metering issue, is how much do they have to buy the power for? And two is, you know, are they allowed to participate?
Do they question the need at all for solar power, given the number of power generating stations and that they've built over the years and the enormous amount of money it costs to build them?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think when we're talking about solar in general, you'll hear Duke say that, you know, they like solar, but that they don't think that they want it just to be able, anybody to be able to build no matter what, and then they have to buy the power, mm-hmm. which, you know, to some degree is the system that we have right now.
Let's talk about net metering a little bit more. Representative Soka, I don't know whether your bill addresses this or not, but do they have a point that they're right now they are forced by law to pay homeowners or anybody they're buying the solar power from? If it's rooftop solar,
right.
they have to pay the retail freight on that as opposed to the wholesale freight. Do they have a point about that being unfair or too cost prohibitive?
They may have a point there. I will cede that. But what they're saying when they want a comprehensive effort and a comprehensive solution, what they're really saying, that's code for they want a study to drag this out. My job as a legislator, I wasn't elected to come here and study things to death. I was sent here to set what I think is good public policy. I think this is good public policy. The mechanism to determine what the right rate of reimbursement for net metering is isn't the legislative body. It's the Public Utilities Commission. Those are the people who are the experts in this, and that's where utility cases go all the time that settle these type of issues. I mean, frankly, you don't want me figuring out what the rate is on net metering. We want the experts doing it. I'm coming at this from a policy perspective. So do they have a point? Yes. But is the legislature the right place to figure out, should it be 8 cents, should it be 11.38? It's not. That's not my job.
Jim Warren, your focus obviously is on conservation and clean environment, et cetera. Do you care? Does NC Warren or other environmental groups care whether or not the power company is forced to pay retail or wholesale? And if they were able to pay wholesale and that would hasten the development of solar power, would you be in favor of that?
Well, we absolutely care. We care very much about the economic well-being of individual customers in the state as a whole, and I couldn't agree more with Representative Soka. This is a Duke strategy for delay. We had a study bill for third-party sales 4 years ago, and it spent a lot of time. It went nowhere. Duke Energy is concerned because solar is chipping into its monopoly control and its very business model and its profits. Net metering is it's a fair way to give customers back very valuable juice that they're putting onto the grid. Think about it. Solar power contributes to the grid at the most important time of the day, during peak hours. It's the time where it's expensive for Duke to produce electricity. So it's a good.
But doesn't that make it more? Doesn't that make it more expensive for Duke to generate electricity if they have to buy the power at retail?
Well, no, because it's offsetting Duke's need to use peaking plants and buying juice off the wholesale market. That's much more expensive.
Wholesale? Stop right there. Wholesale is more expensive than retail?
Well, no.
In what universe is that true?
Well, we're talking about when they sometimes have to go into spot market buying from other suppliers. It's rather than get into the weeds of that, let's just acknowledge that during the peak hours, that's when the electricity is the most valuable. So in a state with good public policy and good cooperation between Duke Energy and customers, we all benefit by adding juice onto the grid during that period. And I will note that is another angle that really supports the idea of allowing competition, because every new bit of solar that goes on to the grid helps not just the customers who add it, but it helps all customers by eliminating Duke's argument to continue building power plants and raising rates to do that.
John Soka, is there anything in your bill that would prevent or allow Duke Energy from getting into the business of putting solar arrays on individual rooftops and then leasing that to the homeowners? Anything in the bill that would prevent or allow that?
There's nothing that prevents them. It opens up the marketplace to every eligible business, and if Duke wants to get into it, they certainly can.
So, to use an electrical term, they could short circuit some of some of the downside of this by getting into the business themselves.
You couldn't help yourself.
You couldn't. Exactly right.
That's pretty good. I like that.
All right. There's
and they could, and they're already in the business. As I pointed out earlier, they bought this company REC Solar, who the primary purpose of that, and I'm reading from one of Duke's news releases. It says, this arrangement will build on Duke Energy's mission of giving commercial customers solutions that reduce energy costs and achieve their sustainability goals. And they go on and on here. They want to lower upfront costs and reduce the complexity of going solar. Our aim is to accelerate commercial solar growth and provide end-to-end energy solutions to businesses, governments, and educational institutions across the United States. That's coming from Duke's own news release. I don't think they'd have a problem with it. They could certainly be in it. They're in 12 states. They've invested over $4 billion in renewables. in the last 10 years. So I think they'd be more than happy. I don't know why they don't like competition.
Okay. There are some who believe that Duke has somehow inserted a poison pill into Representative Soka's bill. I'd like to hear from you, Representative, on that. But first, Ben, what would that poison pill be?
So we would talk a little bit about net metering. And essentially, there is a provision at the bottom of the bill that says that the Utility Commission, the state regulators that kind of decide, you know, rates and have to approve what utilities do and so forth, can study the actual cost of or credit of residential solar, so or commercial solar. So essentially, you know, what does it actually cost the utility to buy power from these rooftop solar things, and then the commission can set a different rate for it, presumably based on what that study says.
And when I talked about poison pill, Representative Soka, I heard you laugh, and I know that you have said that it's absolutely not true.
Well, it isn't. I wish I would have had that level of participation with Duke to help me on the bill to allay some of their fears. That did not come from them. That came from me and the folks who are working with me on this bill. None of them aligned with Duke. Basically, what that is saying in legalese is what I said a bit ago. The purpose of legislation is to provide public policy direction. It's the Utilities Commission job to figure out exactly what the net metering compensation should be and what these other things should be. And one thing I did put in here, personally myself, such fees and credits shall be non-discriminatory and applied only after an investigation of the costs and benefits of customer sited generation. Non-discriminatory is defined by the Public Utilities Commission as a very specific term. That whole sentence was worded very carefully to build on previous public utility decisions that are published out there in the public. So it's not a poison pill. It's there to allow, actually to give direction to the Public Utilities Commission to basically do their job.
And Mike,
go ahead.
Sorry.
That's right. Go ahead.
Mike, there's some important context to this. I would refer listeners to the Washington Post of March 7th, where they talked about what others have reported, too. There is an enormous shift underway nationally in the electric power industry, and a number of companies got together and decided that they weren't going to evolve with the clean technologies and innovation. They decided they were going to fight back. And against, especially against distributed generation, including especially rooftop solar. So they set out a plan to go state by state and persuade legislatures to put taxes on rooftop solar. They weren't very successful. Their backup plan was to go to state regulatory commissions and try to put a tax on solar power. But they're fighting, against The trends of history at this point. You've got the entire private investment community internationally moving toward and behind clean innovations, and you've got a handful of monopoly utilities that are trying to hang on to that old way of building power plants and raising rates. And that gets back to what that provision in the bill would be. The Utilities Commission already has the authority to do a lot of the things that Duke is saying they would want to do, but that's going to be a another fight at a later time.
Let's talk about some other piece of behavior that you wrote about in an article that appeared in the Raleigh News and Observer, Jim. You talked about how utilities are passing bad information to low-income neighborhoods, saying that a vote for solar is a vote to have solar subsidized by non-solar customers who will pay more than their fair share for traditional power generation. Do you have more than anecdotal evidence on that?
Oh, absolutely. And again, see the Washington Post of March 7th and a host of other exposés about this strategy that was crafted, again, out west at a resort with a bunch of the monopoly utilities. And part of that strategy is to try to pick off African-American leaders, civic leaders, and legislators. And that failed in a number of other states and with the Congressional Black Caucus and with the National NAACP. But Duke Energy brought it to North Carolina anyway. And people can see the letter that Reverend Nelson Johnson and I wrote to CEO Lynn Good and the op-eds that you referred to that talk about people visiting the Reverend and trying to say, look, this is not a good angle for your community. And there have been a lot of other people in the faith community across the state that are speaking out and saying that this is not true. The basic argument is they say, well, low-income people are going to be left to subsidize solar for higher-income people. But the irony is, without getting into all the details, Representative Zoka's bill actually corrects any potential problem there by improving the financing situation. So it actually, the bill would actually help people across most of the income and economic spectrum to get into solar.
So on the one hand, if Representative Zoka's bill passed, it would be possible, because people could lease now these solar arrays for their rooftops, it would be possible for poor people to have access to this technology that they could not possibly afford today, thereby lowering their power bills on the one hand. On the other hand, if you don't take advantage of it, and there are more solar arrays on rooftops for which Duke Energy has to pay the retail fare, won't your traditional power bill go up?
Well, again, our analysis shows, and others around the country are saying, look, every time you add solar, you are knocking down the argument for raising rates by building more power plants. And Duke has raised rates about 25% over the last 4 or 5 years, and their 15-year plan shows that they're going to continue to try to raise rates by building power plants and cleaning up coal ash. The Energy Freedom Act is a real pressure relief valve for that whole system that is continuing to raise rates and hurt the economies, especially of local governments and small business and residential homeowners.
If Duke were allowed to pay the wholesale price to buy back power from rooftop solar, would it then still make sense for companies in the business of installing and selling or leasing rooftop solar to do that? Would there be as much of an appetite for it among homeowners?
Well, I mean, there'd definitely be less of an appetite, only because, you know, you're getting paid less money. In terms of, you know, what the ultimate effect on the industry would be, I'm not sure yet. This is a fight that's going on, though. You know, Jim mentioned that Washington Post article. I mean, this is an argument that's going on throughout the country, and you see utilities commissions kind of debating this. And there are studies on both sides of it, depending on where you look. There was an MIT study that just came out that said, hey, you know, this net metering thing doesn't, you know, that was opposed to net metering. It said that that rate didn't make sense, and that it was a kind of an antagonistic way to do this. If I were to try to provide the context from Duke, them not being here, the other thing I would probably point out to is that the state regulators, that we have a thing called the public staff that essentially is supposed to be on the side of ratepayers. So it's on the side of the people who pay the bills. And the public staff had kind of expressed the concern that solar companies can cherry pick their customers, right? Because as we mentioned before, Duke has to provide energy to everybody. And solar companies would not have to do that. So they can go and target the customers that they want, who they feel are the most lucrative. And then those are all of a sudden out of or diminished in Duke's rate base.
Right. So if you have a 5,000 square foot home, the chances are you can afford a solar array, and that home takes up a lot of power, which would then not be going to Duke.
In addition, you have the rooftop
right
for it.
That's Ben Bradford, energy reporter here at WFAE News. Jim Warren is executive director of NC Warren. They're a conservation and environmental group. And Representative John Zoka from Cumberland County is the sponsor of the Energy Freedom Act that we're talking about. That and more when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Central Piedmont Community College's Small Business Center, offering QuickBooks classes for entrepreneurs and small business owners to start, grow, and manage their businesses. Details at cpcc.edu and search for QuickBooks. And Discovery Place, now showing Mysteries of the Unseen World in the giant screen IMAX Dome Theater, revealing phenomena previously unseen to the naked eye through high-speed and time-lapse photography. Tickets at Discovery Place. thesolarplace.com. According to a new study from Pew Research, the number of Americans not affiliated with any religion now make up more than 20% of the population. The increase is especially pronounced among younger people. And on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, they'll discuss the causes and consequences of this country's declining religious affiliation. If you'd like to join our conversation, Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
What's that saying again? Nothing's certain except death and taxes, right? Also, books by politicians in campaign season.
Candidates feel a lot of pressure to get their message out there in their words with their ideas without the filters of lots and lots of other people.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the business of political manifestos, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Ben Bradford from WFAE News, Jim Warren, the executive director of NC Warren, and Representative John Soka, a Republican from Cumberland County who has introduced House Bill 245, the so-called Energy Freedom Act, which would literally change the it would be a paradigm shift in the solar energy business that we've been talking about. We asked people on Facebook and Twitter about more solar options. If they'd like to see them, would they take advantage of them if they became available? Here's what some people have been saying. Sandy responds, yes, we certainly have plenty of sunshine in our state. Let's grab it and use it. Neil emails, on a vacation tour of Turkey a couple of years ago, we noticed that home rooftop solar power and also rooftop water heating was on the vast majority of houses. We're behind Turkey, huh? Bill from Matthews emails, are there any developers in North Carolina that are building solar neighborhoods or large apartment complexes? Do we know that? The answer to that question?
If there are
any developers building solar neighborhoods or large apartment complexes?
Not you're starting to see that in California, not so much in North Carolina for reasons we've discussed.
Roy on Facebook has an interesting question. So what happens when you lease the solar panels for your home, but you move before the lease is up? It's not like a car. You can't take it with you. What happens then? Has anybody worked that out yet? Nope. Okay.
Well, I think somebody's worked it out. They've been doing this in a lot of other states. I don't know the answer to that, but okay. I would imagine somebody's figured it out.
Yeah, the system will generally follow the home, but that could be very different depending on different companies and different contracts.
And Tom asks, yes, he would take advantage of it, but how can you get past the HOA ugliness paradigm restricting panel placement? I've tried to talk to my HOA to no avail. Panels can only go on the back of the house. Thus, only ideally placed homes can install panels. Is there legislation in the works or on the books that would handle that?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. What have you heard, Representative Soka, from, because we all know Duke Energy lobbies the legislature. What have you heard from Duke about your bill?
Initially, quite a bit. Lately, not much. They haven't talked to me lately. Let me point out a couple things. When I introduced this bill, there's four main sponsors. There's myself. I'm a chair of the Finance Committee. Representative Dollar, McGrady, and Linda Johnson, who are all big chairs on Appropriations Committee, all Republicans. There's 26 other co-sponsors. When you total it all up together, there's 16 Democrats and 12 Republicans on here. 30 out of 120 members of the House support this bill. I think that's a good start to show that we've got some good bipartisan support for this bill. As far as Duke lobbying, they lobby just like a lot of other companies lobby, and they have their point of view, which they like to get across. And I have my point of view, which I am also lobbying my fellow House members to let them know how I see things.
Let's talk about monopoly for a second, because that's come up a bunch of times in this conversation. Duke Power, Duke Energy, all utility companies that supply electricity around the country essentially have monopolies. And the reason that they have those monopolies is because it takes an enormous amount of capital to build power generation plants. It takes an enormous amount of capital to build and maintain the distribution channels to get the electricity from the power plant to your home and to keep that up when storms hit all the time and the power lines go down. That's why they have a monopoly. So when you introduce this new force, this solar energy force, do they not have a point that even though they are now having to pay homeowners for the power they're buying from the and putting back on the grid, they still have to maintain those power plants. They still have to maintain those distribution wires. It's not going to be sunny every day of the week. Don't they have a point?
Mike, there's an important point that hasn't been discussed yet. Duke Energy has a basic service charge for every customer. And it's a fixed rate no matter how much juice you use during the month or if you use any at all. And they have been raising that charge on customers in each of the recent rate cases. That basic charge largely is designed to handle the fixed costs that you describe. And whether that is too much or too little is something that the Utilities Commission has a chance to look at. But the evidence is not there that the public should be left under an antiquated model when the rest of the nation is moving ahead with competition. Competition, as Representative Soka said beautifully earlier, that can be very helpful for the entire state, and it should be something that Duke Energy is getting into also. Let's put Duke in the marketplace and make them compete. They are doing very well in other states, as described earlier. $4 billion in investment. It's been one of the most lucrative parts of Duke Energy. But here in the state, this really does come down to an old guard that is trying to hang on to a monopoly model to raise rates under a regulated commission.
You know, we've seen technology, new emerging technologies, wreak havoc on the music industry, on the movie industry, the radio and television industry. We've seen it devastate the newspaper industry. None of those that we can live without television, we can live without radio, we can live without newspapers. I don't know that we can live without electric power anymore. We're too spoiled. So the question becomes, is it wise to put that at risk, the stability of that system at risk?
Well, I don't see that stability is an issue at all. I mean, what we've got in other states, we've got solar power and distributed generation integrating nicely into overall grid systems. The Department of Energy and others have studied this and said, look, there's no problem integrating solar into our system until we get way on up into toward 30% of overall generation. So we're not talking about an unstable system. We're talking about a situation where Duke Energy has to play on a more level playing field and probably can't make the high profit rates maybe that they have been accustomed to under a monopoly system that guarantees them a large rate of return and the ability to keep raising rates to build power plants we don't need.
John Soka, right now those who decide to install solar panels on their roofs, I understand, get a 35% renewable energy tax credit from the state. That's scheduled to end this year. Given our success with solar, is that and the enthusiasm that we apparently have in the legislature for your bill, is that likely to be extended by the legislature? That 35% credit?
I don't see that for small scale projects. No, I don't. The temperature of the legislature, and I agree with this, is to delete most tax credits, and we've done that with tax reform by lowering the marginal rates for both businesses and individuals and let people spend more of their own money rather than sending it to the state and let us figure out how to spend it. And I come back to private property rights and free market principles. You know, our economy thrives on innovation and competition and choice. And what this bill does, it's permissive. And if credits go away and it's allowed to do this, but it doesn't make economic sense, well then that's the answer.
Well, theoretically, you wouldn't need these credits, would you, if your bill goes through and people can lease?
Somebody would end up getting the credits. In other states, the owner of the property, the leasor, retains the rights for these credits. But on a typical rooftop system, the credit is minuscule and doesn't really do much for anybody.
There's another energy bill going through the legislature that we should talk about before we run out of time. The Regulatory Reform Act passed the House 77-32. It now goes to the Senate. At the moment, utility companies are mandated to get 12.5% of their energy from renewable sources by 2021. Today, they are mandated to get 6%, and this new bill would freeze that mandate at 6%. 6%. Another provision would change the set rate that those who operate solar farms get from utility companies. Ben, talk about that.
Yeah, so now we're moving over from rooftop solar over to this large utility-scale solar. And first of all, the bill, as you said, freezes where we are right now in terms of the amount that, utilities have to buy from renewable energy. The other thing that it does, and this is probably more significant if you talk to the solar industry, right now there's a for solar, one of the probably the main reason people would point to for the solar success in North Carolina is that there's a standard contract that if you're a solar developer and you're going to build a big solar farm, and you want to do that, you know you're going to get a standard contract as long as you build it under this certain size, which is pretty large compared to other states. And essentially, this bill takes that size that you can get a standard contract on and brings it down below the point where you can get where you get sort of your industrial scale farm.
So right now, the size, and I'm not sure anybody understands what this means, but you can build a solar farm up to 5 megawatts, and Duke has to pay a set amount for 15 years under contract for the power generated. And I think we did a show on this about a year ago. I think 5 megawatts would power a neighborhood.
Yeah, it's for solar especially, I think about a megawatt to 100 homes.
So this new suggestion would be that you could build a solar farm that generates only 100 kilowatts. I don't know what that is.
That's a business maybe. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And Duke would then be able to negotiate whatever they want, whatever they can get out of you for what they would pay you.
Right.
What's wrong with that? Because although some say this absolutely guts the key provision that has made solar so successful in North Carolina, what is wrong with that negotiation?
Private developers, starting a couple of years ago, began complaining that Duke Energy was slow-walking them on contracts. And so the idea of getting a standardized contract for a higher level was very important. If you leave it to where Duke is allowed to negotiate every contract, then it just slows down the development of solar power.
Well,
except under Duke's control, and this is another way that a monopoly utility exerts its control.
Let me hear from our Republican representative, a free market person, on this. Should that happen? Should that be allowed to happen?
What's interesting in this case is that the Utilities Commission did a study as one of their rate cases. Not that long ago, within the last 6 months, and recommended keeping the 5 kilowatt in place. They said it was working well, and that there was no real need to go to the 100 or the 5 megawatt. Keep that in place and not go to the federal standard of 100 kilowatts. The folks who put this in the bill are trying to get state law in compliance, no more restrictive or permissive than federal law, and that was really the genesis for that.
But what about the negotiation aspect of it? Duke's ability then would be to negotiate whatever they want, and it wouldn't be set by a commission, and it wouldn't be in stone for 15 years.
I can't speak to the intent of whether Duke would slow down or not. If past history shows that to be true, that might be the case. I don't know if it is or not.
This bill, I understand, would also allow utilities to walk away from power they don't need. Utilities say that they would lower customer costs because they, the utilities, would not have to buy more expensive renewable energy that they don't need.
I think that's actually probably a I might have actually supplied you with that. That's probably my fault.
Walk it back.
Let me walk that back. So talking through it, there's a line in the bill that reads that way. But what it really means is that it would lower the amount of this sort of standard cost. So right now, the set rate that utilities pay is supposed to be equivalent to what it would cost them to put the power online themselves. And essentially, the bill calls to take out what we call a capacity charge in that rate and basically lowers that rate. So that's the actual effect of it.
Okay. We have an email from Bill who says, please comment on the recent North Carolina House legislation to reduce the established NC Green Energy Goal for 2020. What is the rationale for such legislation? I live in Rutherford County and am very upset by Republican Hager's support of this draft legislation. Can you comment on that, Representative Silka?
I think what he's talking about is the bill that you're referring to, which is House Bill 760, the It's in regulatory reform, and that's exactly what he's talking about. The first thing, the portfolio standard that's now frozen at 6% of North Carolina okay. retail sales for renewable. So he needs to call his representative and let him know what he thinks.
The price for solar technology has dropped considerably in recent years, and one would presume, as with all technology, the price will continue to fall as it goes as time goes on. And if it does, and that allows more people to adopt it, whether or not your bill goes through, Representative Zucker, which would allow them to lease this equipment, what would it ultimately mean for utility companies that have held sway for 100 and some years now? What would it mean?
That's a great question. I don't have that crystal ball in front of me right now. It's in the shop for repair. What will it mean? I don't know. You know, look at cell phones, or better yet, look at computers. I was around when laptops and desktops first came out in the mid-'80s. The first computer I bought in 1984, a desktop, back then it was $3,500 with a printer. And now I have more computing power on my iPhone than I did on that computer. Where is this going? I don't know. Look at what Elon Musk just announced. I don't know if you saw that here a couple of weeks ago.
The battery?
He's announced the battery.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
for
and that
your
still
house.
Has
for
some
your
issues.
House to collect
for your
a,
house.
Yeah, to
yeah.
collect power.
He calls it a power pack, $3,500, and it can save energy during the day for you to use at night. Can it power the whole house? Not yet. But that technology is racing towards the future. We can look towards the past and say we want monopolies, or we can look towards the future and believe in the entrepreneurship of Americans, which is what made this country great, and see that we're going to solve these problems technologically.
Why aren't utility companies racing to get into the solar business then?
Well, I think they are. I mean,
is Duke?
They're just doing it on their terms.
Yeah, some of them are. Some of them are. And Duke Energy can profit from solar if they will, and I agree entirely with what was just stated. This is a pivotal time, Mike. Solar can help our economy in many different ways and can help us decarbonize our state and move ahead. And it's really important that we go forward with it.
Jim Warren, Executive Director of NC Warren. In 10 seconds or less, Representative Zucker, what's the chance of passage for your bill, do you think?
I'm rating it 50-50 right now.
Okay. Representative John Zucker, Republican from Cumberland County, the sponsor of the Energy Freedom Act, House Bill 245, and Ben Bradford, energy reporter here at WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7.